Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by conservatives Mike Miller of DePaul University and Stephanie Hitt, liberals Dave Lundy and John McCarron. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. That's if you miss a show, you can see the audio and video portion of the broadcast online. Tonight, we're going to be spending 2 hours talking about the convention that just ended in Tampa, and also be looking ahead to the Democratic convention that starts this coming week in Charlotte. But again, we're going to ask our guests, two Republicans, two Democrats, two conservatives, two liberals, whatever you want to call them. They answer to all of those labels. And we begin tonight with Mike Miller, who's our conservative Republican from DePaul University, and he is a professor who is a conservative Republican. Mike, always nice to have you with us. What was the moment for you at the Republican convention, the memorable moment that you personally will never forget?
There were two. One had to do with that couple that talked about their son, and Mitt came in and helped him when he was dying and so forth. Is Mitt a decent human being? Is he a man that we could trust? And I believe with those series of events, the answer was yes.
Let me also ask our other Republican, Stephanie Hitt. Stephanie, a lawyer and also a housewife and mother from Evanston, Illinois. The moment for you.
The moment, and the most critical line of the night was Mitt Romney's own line when he said President Obama promised to begin to slow the rise of the oceans and to heal the planet. My promises to help you and your family. That was it in a nutshell.
Our Democrats have perhaps a different perspective. Dave Lundy is a well-known political consultant. Dave, most memorable moment for you?
Well, clearly it has to be the empty chair. I think the empty chair was a nice metaphor for the vision that Mitt Romney laid out for the future. But also it was a fantastic moment of missed opportunities, because the folks that Stephanie talked about, who laid out who the real Mitt Romney was, the human Mitt Romney, they should have been in prime time.
Okay, now let's go to John McCarron, adjunct professor at DePaul University, but also longtime columnist and member of the Tribune editorial board. Your memorable moment, Mr. Media Person?
Yeah, I watched a lot. I get two, right?
Yeah.
Well, certainly one would be the totality of Ann Romney's speech. I thought she was far and away the best speaker at the convention, even though she's probably the less practiced. I couldn't even tell she was using a teleprompter. She was nicely paced and whatnot. And I'll probably second Stephanie's thing about when the candidate made fun of global warming. I thought that was a very telling moment right there.
Let's go back to Ann Romney, because I agree with John. I thought that was the moment. Supposedly, she had never worked with a teleprompter or given a big speech before. I sort of find that hard to believe, but perhaps so, because she was so perfect in her delivery. And I thought the content of what she said certainly got to the core of one of her goals, which was to convince women and convince the general public that her husband is a warm and fuzzy guy beneath that veneer of Brooks Brothers suits and Harvard Business School.
Well, I found what I think made Anne so wonderful was that she was genuine. She was sincere. I think she did speak from the heart. I think we all got that sense. You don't need a teleprompter to speak from the heart. And she did a fantastic job doing that. The other thing is she made everything relatable. And that was really important. Remember, going into the convention, there was this sense that that Mitt is somehow disconnected with everyday Americans. And she laid it out there, her story. Her story with Mitt is the story of so many other people, and that is young couples out on their own, living in the basement, struggling, pulling together, trying to build a family, trying to build a business. And that really set the theme and the tone for the entire convention.
Dave, how did Ann Romney play for you? Again, you know, you're a Democrat, you're going to vote for Obama, but again, as a political commodity, as the message that she was delivering, how were you receiving it as a Democrat?
Oh, I was very comfortable with Ann Romney. I thought she was quite good. I thought, you know, 4 years ago, Michelle Obama was quite good at helping to, mm-hmm. you know, personalize and humanize Barack Obama. I think that, you know, a lot of time the candidates' wives are remarkably underestimated because these people are often – they've been a politician's wife or they've been a senior executive's wife for many, many years. They're very good at delivering a speech. They've done it before. I mean, I thought she was terrific. So I don't really have an issue. That said, interestingly, I've heard some of Democratic women friends who actually did have some issues with her content. They thought that she was being a bit patrician. They thought that she was being a bit disingenuous. But frankly, I don't think that matters. I think she came across fine and delivered it terrifically.
Mike?
It could be just a difference in philosophy of the role of the mother, the father, the position of the wife versus the husband. They may just see the world differently. It may have something to do with their religion.
She had one dog whistle line in there. She said, Mitt and I have a real marriage,
yeah.
as opposed to others who have less than real marriages.
Yes. What kind would they be talking about, I wonder?
Well, also, the other point is, I wonder how many people in the hall, and I wonder how many people watching on television, at some point during the week, did they say, especially at the end, boy, I wish that she was running instead of Mitt.
I didn't say that. I'll tell you why.
I know you didn't say it, but
I wonder.
I'll bet that thought was uttered by people.
I think Condi was dynamite. And some people maybe wonder maybe she should have been there instead of Paul Ryan. Not me. I happen to think Ryan was a perfectly fine choice.
What about
a couple of these people?
What about Ryan's speech?
It was good. Again, talking about
the passion in the crowd.
Yeah, there's you were mentioning about giving a speech, and you know, I think of all the phobias in all of humankind, the one is talking in front of a group. He was so natural. He really could deliver a speech better than Romney can, for sure. And not only that, we know his knowledge of the topics. I was very impressed by Ryan. In fact, I would if I had my druthers, he would be at the top of the ticket. I would have supported Ryan from the beginning.
Yeah, I think the distinction is not between Ann Romney and Mitt Romney. It's between Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney. Clearly, Paul Ryan speaks to the conservatives in the crowd.
Yes.
He spoke to the delegates. Paul Ryan is evoked the passion in the base that Mitt Romney was sorely lacking.
He was the House favorite.
So in terms of – and as a performance, he was just as good as Sarah Palin was 4 years earlier.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely.
From a content perspective, pretty much every editorial writer I've seen, every fact checker, a whole slew of columnists just ripped his speech apart in a way I've never seen a vice presidential nominee speech ripped apart in terms of his inability to grasp facts on issue after issue, whether it was the GM plant that closed before Obama was president or whether it was attacking Simpson Bowles, but referring to it as they instead of we, since he was the one on the commission and he voted against Simpson Bowles. It was just really impressively mendacious.
I want to come back and give everybody an opportunity to respond to that. 1-800-723-8289. This is your opportunity for the next hour and 45 minutes to give your analysis of the Republican convention in your view, the winners, the losers, the high points, the low points. We've gone through 15 minutes and we haven't even talked about Clint Eastwood yet, but we will back shortly. From Malibu to Milwaukee, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. The calls are already in. Let's head to Cookeville, Tennessee, where Jerry is listening to us on WATX Radio. Go ahead, Tennessee.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. You know, the gentleman that just got through talking about fact-checking in Paul
Yes,
Ryan.
Uh-huh. Okay, Dave Lundy.
Now, there was two things he said, and I didn't get the second one, but the first one was about the GM plant. Now, Paul Ryan never said that Barack Obama closed the plant. He said to Barack Obama when he came to Janesville and when he was speaking to the people there that he said with government help, there's no reason why this plant shouldn't stay open for another 100 years. Well, the fact is that government did help GM. And that plant's closed today. And it's not like he said that Barack Obama came in and shut it down. And so, I mean, when I hear this, it's like, wow, they, you know, they're really, really going out on a limb. And the other one, I believe, I'm not sure.
Hang on, Jerry, just one second, because Stephanie wants to follow up on that point as well. She defends
fact checkers are all checking in now. What we're seeing is, in fact, that that plant was not shut down in December of 2008 before Obama took office, but it was shut down. There were still some things coming off the line in April of 2009, 3 months after Obama took office. I think I don't want to jump ahead too far from our caller's point, but what we need to look at is, I think, what you're touching on, and that is when Obama comes in to save GM, what he does is he also institutes a whole slew of central planning policies that I think we could all agree that no matter how hard he tried to apply them, would have ended up shutting the Janesville plant anyway. The emphasis that he put on building certain kinds of fuel-based cars and changing, moving from a central plan towards the Chevy Volt, for example.
But we're getting too far into the weeds on this point. But because I think the bigger, broader issue is there was the speech. There was the right. day after, actually 2 days after, about the fact-checked aspect Correct. Of the speech. A week from now, people are not going to remember that. But in the debate, when he will have his debate with Joe Biden and when he's on the campaign trail, he will continue to make points. The question is he going to be able to bring it back to his area of expertise, John? It seems to me that he will, because this guy loves a good verbal battle.
Well, he does. And he's very, very clever at stating things in such a way that he pushes the truth, but it's not exactly a falsitude.
And
the way he set up the Janesville thing, he didn't come out and say that that Obama caused it to die. And he did several other things. He trotted out the $750 billion. Taken from Medicare. Well, it's not taken from Medicare. It shifted from one type of spending within Medicare to another. And of course, Ryan doesn't mention that it's also part of the Ryan plan. If anything else, the Ryan plan is more draconian when it comes to Medicare. Well,
Jerry, second question to you, then we're moving on.
Yeah, okay. Well, with all due respect to John and everything and the liberals on the staff, something else people have been talking about with Paul Ryan was that he voted against the Simpson-Bowles plan. Well, yes, he did. He didn't think it went far enough. But he was just one congressman out of 435. The president, the one who put it together, declined to do anything on it. So I mean, I really amazes me how I hear him say, well, Paul Ryan voted against it. Well, yeah, he voted against it.
Well, let's let Dave Lundy respond to that, because I think that is one of the major points. They made a big deal about this commission. The president wanted to see it. He looked at it, and he didn't do anything with it. It's led to no budget being passed by the Senate. There's a lot of very bad things that the president and those of his supporters have to defend. Where would you put the waffling on Simpson-Bowles?
Well, first of all, I just need to clarify for the caller. The issue is not that he was one of 435 members of Congress that voted against, or that one of 435 members of Congress. The issue is that he was on the Simpson-Bowles Commission.
Yes, I understand.
And he was one of only three members that voted against it. And the idea that he voted against it because it didn't go far enough when it was going to cut $4 or $5 trillion from the budget is astonishing. You know, there's
so
a great.
Why do you think he voted against it? Why do you think he voted against it then?
Because there was revenue. Because there was revenue, and there's an ideological purity test in the Republican Party these days that says if you have any revenue increases, you have to vote no. It's the Grover Norquist test, and this is the test that
the
is just.
Is that a fair? Is that
Obama
Mike? Is that a fair? Is that, thanks for your call, Jerry. Is that a fair assessment of that vote? We don't know what motivated him, but that sounds like a rational.
Yes, it is, but. We're finding that a lot of people have a certain political view And it's very hard to vote all the time on those views. Only there's a, and not because I didn't support him necessarily, but there aren't that many Ron Pauls in the world. This is a man of conviction who will vote exactly his way all the way, and he's philosophically correct or pure every single time. And clearly, there's going to be Republicans who do certain things that, you know, they will say one thing philosophically, but when it comes time to vote, it's very hard to vote.
Did Ryan connect on which I thought the thing that was coming through to me was just on the whole the generational difference. I mean, the generational difference between he and Mitt Romney, that, you know, for the 40s, the 40 somethings and the 30 somethings, he was probably hitting home runs.
He actually addressed many generational issues. He talked about the generational difference between him and Mitt and how those things, they don't mean something when they believe in the same principles. And I think all of us here would agree, one of the key lines of the night was his reference to college graduates in their 20s sitting in their home bedrooms staring at their faded Obama posters wondering when is it going to get better.
But Bruce, he doesn't strike me as an AC/DC kind of guy.
No.
And I was thinking, you know, there was probably a speechwriter who was thinking, let's see, my tastes run from A to Z. AC/DC and Zeppelin, you know.
And supposedly Metallica in between.
I'm just hoping someone is kind of backfilling here by getting back and putting some AC/DC on that iPod pretty quick.
I thought one of the fun lines of the night was when he said, I've listened to Mitt Romney's and I've heard the same thing in elevators. I thought that was a good line.
That was
And he, you know what he did is he said, you know, we aren't talking about generations. We're not talking about popularity. We're talking about principles. We're talking about issues. And those do cross.
In the keynote speech, when Christie was talking about tough ideas, tough decisions, do you think, 3 days later or 2 days later, when Romney had a chance to speak, do you think he really addressed some of the points that were set up by Christie? Do you think the speech was... I mean, last week on this program, we asked our guests and said, what does Romney have to be, you know, last Thursday night? And the word that came out was bold. He had to be bold. Right. Did you think his speech was bold, Mike?
No, I didn't think it was bold. But I don't think that's what he had to get across at this convention. I think he needs to get that across in the debates. I think he had to get style across in this because so many people have attacked him as being plastic and unreal and he isn't for real. I think the convention proved, in fact, that that's just not true. He is a decent human being. He is very helpful for other people. Even his speech, he was kind of, compared to Ryan and others, he was very plastic. I mean, his head was turning just the way it's supposed to. But the thing, if I had one disappointment in it, it was he did not give enough of his economic philosophy in that talk. He put out his 5 points, several of which I wasn't even that excited about. Mm-hmm. I wish he had been more bold regarding something like tax cuts what Ryan focused on, the absolute generational problem that you and I, we're older guys, we're going to have our Medicare and we're going to have our Social Security, but they are absolutely broke.
Do you think it's fair to say, I'm going to ask you, Stephanie, and then I want to get the Democrats percent. Would you say that when you looked at the top three speeches at that convention, that Mitt Romney's speech was not in the top three?
No. I actually thought the top three speeches were Marco Rubio's. I would put that number one. I think that he hit all the principles on the head and all the theme of the convention and really brought it all together. The next speech I thought was Susana Martinez, the governor of New Mexico.
I agree with that. She was terrific.
Fantastic. And I think we all remember the line very well of I went to lunch with some Republicans in a country club and I told my husband, you know what? We're Republicans. And that party shift was outstanding, the way she could convey that. And I'm going to throw in a third, and it was more of a substantive speech. And that was Jeb Bush's. I thought Jeb Bush really hit a lot of notes. He talked about a topic that isn't necessarily the number one bullet point, but it's going to be an interesting one through the campaign, and that is education and school. There's no doubt school choice, free market. That's a theme that's underlying this whole Republican Party.
John, were you surprised by the three that Stephanie just named, and would you agree with
them? In fact, just to second the Jeb Bush, I kind of like the idea that he said, quit blaming my brother, because I think too many people in the Obama camp want to just keep piling on George Bush, when in fact, I mean, what happened in 2007, 2008, the Lehman Brothers and the whole house of cards, I mean, that had been boiling up really in many ways for 20 years, the rise of finance capitalism and collateralized the debt obligations. You know, Bill Clinton signed the law that repealed Glass-Steagall that, put the banks in the casino business, if I can use a slight exaggeration. So I kind of appreciated that, because I think it's that we Democrats are too quick to blame Bush for all the world's problems.
Dave, I want to give you an opportunity to offer a rebuttal to the other Democrat when we come back. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, we're going to hear from Malibu and a lot more of the country. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont, live every Sunday night from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Our Democrats, we have two Democrats tonight. Our first Democrat is Dave Lundy. He is a political consultant and the head of Al-Anon Communications. John McCarron also joins us. He is an adjunct professor from DePaul University and a longtime member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board and a columnist for well over close to 30 years. And also joining us as our Republicans this evening, we have Mike Miller. He is a professor of economics at DePaul University, hails from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And Stephanie Hitt also joins us. She went to the University of Virginia. She's also has been a lawyer, and she is a wife and a mother. And last week when she was on the program, you're talking about all the that you're also a chauffeur for your kids.
Yes.
So you're a woman of the
I'm a great driver. I know all about parallel parking.
Okay. We're going to go to calls in just a moment. But you know what? We're going to go to calls because then we'll come back. Let's go to Matt listening to us in Malibu, listening to us on POTUS tonight. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, I actually was quite surprised in some way at this point that there are even two conventions. I mean, we are in a state where what we live in is a corporatocracy. There are a few details on either side that have a different flavor, but it's all part of the same soup. I mean, the level of corporate financing and the level of demagoguery that we see. I mean, the GOP is by far number one guardians of the plutonomy. But when you have Barack Obama come in and start putting the architects of destruction into his cabinet, alarm bells really start to raise. Now, unfortunately, as a nation of humans, not corporate peoples, but humans, we don't really have a choice because we are supposed to be a government of the people, by the people.
Okay, Matt, let me bring your question to a head and ask whether or not at this particular moment, again, we had great enthusiasm for Ron Paul during the primary. Ron Paul had his opportunity, never won some delegates, obviously is not endorsed, Romney as yet, and he's going to go his way. And you've got protesters that are on their way to Charlotte tonight to protest the president. You've got the anti-Wall Street crowd. But in the big, broader body politic, are there enough people out there outraged, John McCarron, to launch a third party effort in any meaningful way?
Well, obviously the history of third party efforts in the last several go rounds is that they really hurt whatever party they're split off from. Ralph Nader was a disaster for the Democrats. And the gentleman I'm blanking on his name,
Ross Perot,
yeah, a disaster for the Republicans. So I'd be careful what you ask for. It could be that third party might undercut the party. I do sympathize. I mean, right after the financial crash, Lehman Brothers going down, the president did have to. I'm sure had to make a decision. Do we want to bring in the old Wall Street hands to find out what to do, or to or do we take a more dramatic stance against what's happened here? And I think caution prevailed, and we brought in Mr. Paulson and as Treasury Secretary, or kept him on, and his successor is very much a Wall Street guy. He used to run the New York Fed. So if that's what the caller is talking about, yeah, we stuck with the regular guys to run the economy.
Dave Lundy, before the break, you were about to make a particular point. I want to give you a chance to do that before we take our next caller.
Well, and it's actually related to both this caller and the point that, that John was making about Glass-Steagall and the deregulation of the financial industry. I think that we can all agree – well, okay, we can all agree on this side of the table that there's way too much corporate influence in our government. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court just made that more likely, not less likely, and we're heading towards a more corporatist approach. That having been said, the idea that there's no distinction between the Democrats and Republicans at this point and that they're both two peas in a pod is just absurd. Democrats actually right. want to restore regulation. Republicans want to get rid of all of it. Democrats are actually very interested in restoring some of the financial controls that that existed before. Republicans don't. So I think that that's that's not a fair point. In terms of W and whether you should stop blaming W, what you blame W for is running up the debt. What you blame W for is putting in place two unfunded wars for the first time in history, one of choice. You blame W for the tax cuts that weren't paid for. You blame W for the Medicare prescription drugs that weren't paid for. You blame W for all of these things that led to where we are today.
You
credit
for protecting the American people? Against another attack? As you would Barack Obama.
Yeah, I mean,
say now, yes. Because I said it for almost 3.5 years, every night we've got to go to bed and we've got to thank George Bush and we've got to thank his attorney generals and we have to thank Barack Obama and his attorney general and defense departments. They are protecting the United States of America.
Clearly, there is a clearly many of the things they did were right. I think they went too far in some of the warrantless wiretaps.
I'm just a little surprised you mentioned about certainly we can. I'm not the biggest fan of George Bush in terms of some of his economic policy. But keep in mind that in 2007, the budget deficit of the United States was 1.7% of GDP and it was coming down. And this was with the existing Bush tax cut rates. The problem that we have such large deficits is partly because the government spending is just off the chart. But secondly, is because unemployment's 8.2%. You take all those extra people, you put them back to work, and they pay taxes, and they don't need as much from the government. The deficit really does get a lot smaller. The student loan problem begins to go away. People being saddled with large debt that they have to pay off, that begins to go away. Mr. Romney in his 5 points should have added a sixth or seventh and said the key to the future is economic growth. Then you Democrats and we Republicans can all have what we want. We can have a growing economy and we will have the money necessary for social programs to help those who can't help themselves.
Yes, except
you need growth for that.
Except Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan's budgets, to the extent that one exists for Mitt Romney, are both predicated on completely unrealistic growth for as far as the eye can see. Their budgets are predicated on at least 4% growth. The United States has not had 4% consistent growth
since Clinton.
Since not consistent growth.
Oh, okay.
They're talking about 4% year after year, decade after decade. That ain't going to happen. It doesn't happen in this country. It happens in China, but we're not China.
Back to calls. Carlos in Houston, Texas, listening to us on XM Satellite Radio tonight. Go ahead, Texas.
Hey, Bruce. I don't know if you remember me, but I was very upset when Mitt Romney won Florida. And Texas bowed out and the rest of the country. But anyway.
Yes, I do. I do remember you, Carlos. Now, I understand you may have changed your mind.
Absolutely. Who changed my mind was Ann Romney. She gave the best speech out of the three nights. She was the best. The second best, I would have to say, is Paul Ryan. Third best was actually Mitt Romney. Okay. What she gave us was the soul of the man. And I listened to her and I said to myself, you know, I'm ultra right wing. I will not even speak to a rhino and I don't even argue with Democrats because they're crazy. I will not even ask them a question, the two Democrats you have there. That's how right wing I am. I don't want to negotiate. I don't want to work with them. I want them out of power and I want the right wing to take over.
Okay.
That's how right wing I am. And you know what? She won me over. I actually took a second look at Mitt Romney. I think he's going to be as good as Ronald Reagan, maybe even better. I think he's going to be one of the best presidents this country will ever have.
What was it that she said that switched you?
She said he will get the job done, and I trust him. When she said that she trusted Mitt, I looked at her. I said, this woman is not lying. She's not placating to us. This woman is telling us the man she's lived with all these years. She's still with him. They have a real marriage, and you can tell she's in love with the man. And well, let me tell you something. If a woman testifies about her husband truthful, I got to listen to the man.
Carlos, let me ask you this question.
Sure.
If Michelle Obama, who already has given a similar speech 4 years ago,
right?
If she gives a similar speech in Charlotte, would you believe her?
No.
Why?
Because she's false. You can tell.
Wait a minute. Why would you say that Michelle Obama is false?
Well, she's not proud of our country. She was proud of the country the first time this guy got nominated, the president we have now. That's when she became proud. Ann Romney loved this country, and you could tell. And you know what? She loves Mitt Romney. There's a reason why she loves him, and I got to take a chance. I'm going to take one chance here, and I'm going to vote for Mitt Romney.
Let me ask you another question.
I'm going to campaign for him, too. Yeah.
Carlos, let me ask you a question. Are you Hispanic?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
What was your reaction? Or by the way, when you were watching, did Governor Martinez of New Mexico, was she shown, did you see her speech?
Those Latin people that were talking, it really didn't budge me one way or the other. I'm more conservative than them. Anything they can say, I can top it, okay? Marco Rubio, I don't trust him. For the simple reason is the rhinos like him. And he reminds me of a young John McCain. And that's what worries me about Marco Rubio. The lady that you mentioned, I don't know too much about her, but doesn't faze me. That stuff about getting Latins out there to try to motivate Latinos, that does not faze me. You got to be a constitutionalist, and you got to hit me with the Constitution for me to believe in you. And
okay.
Romney did that. She basically said to me, you right-wingers, he's more constitutional than you know of.
Okay, very good. That's what everybody hears something different when they're listening and watching the convention. That's Carlos joining us from Houston, Texas, 1-800-723-8029. That's our phone number. Calls lines are open, 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight. Bruce went back in Chicago. Dave Lundy, our Democrat, he was talking about dog whistle moments. What is a dog whistle moment, Dave?
A dog whistle moment is something that is intended to appeal to certain groups. And you use certain language, specific language, code language.
Give me an example.
A great example would be when Ann Romney talked about a real marriage. Many folks on the left said she was trying to distinguish that from gay marriage. When Newt Gingrich talks about, or when they keep launching this about how the president has waived work requirements in welfare reform, which is blatantly untrue, that is believed to be intended to show, see, we told you Barack Obama was trying to appeal to blacks by giving them more welfare. But some people had really interesting interpretations of dog whistle moments. They thought the comment about when the world needs somebody to do something big, you call an American, they thought that was a birther moment against the president. And some of that stuff, I actually think that there's an undercurrent of truth to that.
Which one do you believe?
Oh, the welfare reform. I think absolutely the welfare reform is intended to drive that home. Because it's so blatantly untrue.
Did you hear any dog whistles?
No, I think people. People read so much into things, and I think it's a case of trying to find something that you can use against the other side. My major problem being a social scientist, I guess, is I always like to have something that I can prove, but I cannot ever prove a negative. And what you're essentially saying is, you believe that this is. I believe this is racist. Prove that I'm wrong. There's no way for me to prove that.
I just
can't believe that.
We've got about 10 minutes left in our first hour, and I want to. We've gone this far without talking about Clint Eastwood. And here, let me give you my analysis, and then I'll let everybody pick it apart. For the most part, you know, granted there was the issue of the fact checkers with Paul Ryan, but for most of the speeches, and certainly the Ann Romney speech, and because it was before Mitt Romney spoke, the media and those supporters on the left really didn't have too much to pick apart at this convention. And so they took the one thing that they knew that might have some legs, and that's why, in my view, there has been an overreaction to Clint Eastwood. Should there have been a story or two? Yes. Was it a unique moment? Yes. Did it totally work? It certainly didn't work with the journalists. I'm not so sure it didn't work in the living rooms, but I want to get everybody's reaction to that. But I really think that they went overboard on Mitt Romney because, in their view, that might have been the only thing they ended up with in Tampa. Stephanie?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think we all sort of agree that there was a slight entertainment value to the Clint Eastwood. He's not a politician. He's not a policymaker. He's just an icon. And one of the things that, I know it's this, I feel like the media was looking for this desperate attempt to pick apart something. And they had the something. But there was nothing else they really could pick apart. So
John,
in many ways.
You sort of agree with my assessment. John, what did you think?
I also unfortunately agree with your assessment, Bruce. I also enjoyed the little shtick that he did. I thought it was pretty darn good. And I got a little annoyed watching the Sunday news shows this morning where analysts were complaining that the guy didn't have a script, whereas, you know, I mean, my complaint is that everything is too damn scripted, right? I mean, it's like you're watching a variety show out of Hollywood, and I'd say that about both conventions. So here this guy was off script. He was ad-libbing, and it added a little.
And he's 82 years old.
It added a little,
and that's
excitement.
The way that a lot of 82-year-old people talk.
Yes.
Yes, it is. But is that what you want leading up to Mitt Romney as part of your hour in prime time? I mean, to me, it was more of a political strategy issue. And I really think I fundamentally disagree with what you're all saying in terms of why the media obsessed about this is because of two things. Number one, people were sad. They were sad that Clint Eastwood was not crisp and on his game. If Clint Eastwood had gotten out there, spoke to that chair, and gave a really tight, crisp routine, you would not have had this reaction.
But
a lot
Clint
of people.
Clint Eastwood is not tight and crisp.
No.
He isn't in life. He isn't in his movies.
No, he gave a speech. The whole reason he was put up there is because he gave a speech about 3 months earlier at a Republican event in California in which he endorsed Mitt Romney and attacked Barack Obama. And he gave this great, tight speech. They expected him to do something similar. They were surprised by what he did.
Well, wait a minute. No one in planning of the convention should have been surprised when he asked, somebody asked, put a chair next to me.
Yeah.
What's that
right
about?
Right away. Exactly.
How did you play?
I was watching with my son, who's 28, and we were watching a DVR of our favorite do-it-yourself show, came over, and it was in the middle of Eastwood. And our first reaction is, I'm sorry, what the heck is going on? But within 1 minute, I realized what he was doing. I thought it was a riot. And if you go back and you watch it on YouTube or something. The audience loved it. And if you look at some of his best lines, they were some of the best lines of the – like when you have somebody who's not doing the work you expect them to do, you let them go. What a perfect line. That was done.
I thought the other thing, which again was – it was certainly repeated by Mitt Romney in his speech – but he was speaking again to his generation, and again, a true iconic personality in the history of entertainment. So he was speaking to the over 50 crowd in the audience, and there were a lot there, and certainly those in TV land. But I think that when he started the speech by talking about what happened in Denver, everybody cried. I cried. Oprah cried. He was talking about a lot of people who 4 years ago gave Barack Obama an opportunity because they thought it was going to work. And they were inspired by what happened in Denver. They were inspired by what happened in Grant Park on inaugural night. And those people now are disappointed. I think that's who he was going after. Mm-hmm. And a little stumbling and a little, you know, I think to go out there and give a crisp speech, wouldn't have made it. Again, it was rambling. It was a little hard to watch. But I will bet that the folks out there in TV land, I don't think they were as... And now when they hear all of the media, almost 100% jumping on this iconic 82-year-old actor and saying what a dud he was, I think that's only going to make them like what he said more, because it'll be, hey, I'm not going to let you know, Chris Matthews tell me what Clint
Eastwood.
Time
will tell.
Anyway, it will. Time will also tell that we'll get some more calls in the next hour. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us. If you're watching us on television, we're going to say farewell. If you're listening to us on radio, we'll be back after the network news. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics. Moving into hour number two tonight, featuring commentary by conservatives Mike Miller of DePaul University, Stephanie Hitt, and liberals Dave Lundy, a political consultant, and John McCarron, also of DePaul University and formerly of the Chicago Tribune. Our phone lines open at 1-800 toll-free 8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, our email address btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. That's where you can get the audio and video portion of the show, should you miss it, every Sunday night. 1-800-723-8289. In the first hour, we'll be talking about the Republican convention, which just ended last week in Florida. And we will soon switch gears and look ahead to what is likely to happen this coming week in Charlotte, North Carolina, where the Democrats are assembling. They don't have to battle against the Mother Nature and weather, at least as of this moment in time. We've had a lot of callers on the line, and they've been standing by. Let's move to them right now. From the north side of Chicago we go. John is listening to us on our flagship station, 89 WLS in Chicago. Go ahead, John. Are you there?
Give the guy some slack. You know, he's 82 years old, and I agree what he said about lawyers. Lawyers should never be involved in politics. You know, everything they touch.
But Mitt Romney is a lawyer. He's a lawyer and a businessman.
Yeah, well, you know what? What's the Democrats' response going to be at their convention? They're going to have 90-plus-year-old Betty White saying something intelligent and intellectual?
Maybe so. America loves her. I don't know. Well, we'll find out by the way, the president said in an interview today that he's a big Clint Eastwood fan. Wasn't offended by what was said the other night. So you thought the Clint Eastwood speech worked,
right?
And you liked it.
He had a grand slammer out of the park.
He obviously also thought that we shouldn't be in Afghanistan, which I thought was interesting. Yeah. I thought that put him at odds with the candidate.
He also thought that Barack Obama had put us into Afghanistan, which was also interesting.
Anyway, it was an interesting, again, that's what people are talking about. And again, I go back to the small percentage of people who will ultimately make up their mind, who probably were not watching that convention last week, but maybe responding to the media coverage about it. And as I said in the last hour, if the media elite are picking on Clint Eastwood, an American icon, I think most of the people out there in TV land are probably cheering for Clint Eastwood. Let's go to Kathleen in Homer Glen, also listening to us on WLS. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I was just calling in reference to the gentleman who talked about dog whistle moments in the Ann Romney speech.
Yeah.
Specifically about when she referred to her marriage as a real marriage, and he thought that it possibly was comparing it to a gay marriage.
Right.
And if you were listening to her speech, she mentioned that a lot of people thought that she and Mitt had a storybook marriage because they were wealthy and nothing had gone wrong in their marriage, and she then started talking about a lot of the things and problems that they had had. And then that's when she said that they had a real marriage, and I took it to mean that they had a real marriage with problems just like everyone else.
99.9% of the people viewed it that way, because at that particular moment she was comparing storybook versus real.
Correct.
By the way, let me ask, I want to ask Stephanie, her reference to MS and cancer. Was it too much of a throwaway line? Because there may be some people listening to her that don't know about her medical battles and her success and the role that Mitt played in being a caretaker during that period. Should that have been, I don't want to say played, but I mean, should that have been explained more fully?
Well, I don't think so. I think that she said what she needed to do. I mean, she used them as examples of how Mitt came to her side, how he, you know, he is her teammate and her partner, and that's the kind of person that he is responding. So I don't know that she was using it to go out there and, you know, draw sympathy votes. I think what she was doing is just telling the story as it is. And that was really important. People need to know that, again, as part of understanding what a real marriage, a non-storybook marriage is, every marriage, every couple, no matter what their stage in life, is always going to have difficulties to deal with. And theirs are real difficulties that many Americans, rich, middle class, or poor, are dealing with. And that's health issues is a huge one.
What was the overall grade that you would give to the media coverage this year, Dave?
You know, the less the media covers it, the more I think they are working towards an incomplete. I think very interesting and important things happen at these conventions before 9 o'clock. And while I would like to see them compressed, I think 3 days absolutely was the right amount of time, maybe even two. I think that, you know, when you throw out a lot of the coverage from primetime, from networks, I just think you're doing a disservice. You know, the media increasingly cuts down on the amount of public service activity they do. Yeah. And so I think that the, you know, the partisan networks, frankly, I was very disappointed in MSNBC's coverage. You know, I was tired of hearing Ed Schultz and Al Sharpton and Rachel Maddow. I actually wanted to hear the speeches, and I turned MSNBC off to turn on CNN. I didn't go all the way to Fox, but and so I think
beat
you've got,
which beat everybody in the ratings.
Well, it's a Republican convention, right. And I expect MSNBC to beat everybody for the Democratic convention.
No, I don't know about that.
John?
I think the media have a problem because, you know, Bruce, stuff used to happen at conventions. There was, you know, riots right. In the streets of Chicago. There were correspondents getting thrown off the floor, bodily removed, et cetera. There were extended balloting.
Credential fights.
Credential fights, sure. Remember 68 and Chicago or 72 when the
Miami.
In Miami when the Jesse Jackson's group tried to take over and succeeded to a large extent. That doesn't happen anymore. It's pretty much now a show. It's a Hollywood production to try to create a certain amount of images. So if you're a straight-leg journalist up there in the booth, what do you do?
Last week on this program, we talked about whether or not with Romney and Ryan as a team, were we looking potentially at maybe 16 years of Republican control? Stephanie, you even backed away, our Republican. You backed away from looking at anything that long term. So let me ask you a different question this week. Looking at the people who had their moment in the spotlight, assuming that Ann Romney is not going to replace Mitt Romney if Mitt Romney is elected president of the United States. We don't have a Hillary Clinton situation in the offing there. Who used their time the best insofar as in this competition for the future?
Well, first of all, I want to say the Republicans proved that they've got a stable of candidates that could see this country through soundly and just brilliantly. Probably, let's see, count up the number, multiply it by 4 years each. I think we've got a good 60 years or so of strong. I mean, look who's out there. Nikki Haley, Susana Martinez, Marco Rubio, Chris Christie. You may not have liked his speech, but he's a contender out there.
Paul Ryan.
Yeah. The stable goes on and on.
So
and
the brand was helped.
Incredibly. We are young, strong, and bright.
There you go. 1-800-723-8289. Your reaction when we come back from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. During the break, we were talking about the Democrats and what bench strength we're going to see move forward and put into the spotlight this coming week in Charlotte. And, Dave, during the break, you acknowledged what Stephanie was saying before the break, that you thought that the Republican bench looks pretty strong right now if you're looking 4, 8, 16 years out.
Oh, absolutely. I think that if the purpose of the convention was to define Mitt Romney and humanize him, it was of a mixed success. If the purpose of the convention was to showcase the next generation, I think it was fantastic, not only in showcasing some really interesting personalities, but also in separating.
So it improved the brand. You agree with my point about that it improved the Republican brand?
No, I don't think. I think there's a very different issue between Okay. Do you have good candidates and are you improving the brand?
Okay.
I don't know what the Republican brand is right now other than pretty right wing. But in terms of their bench strength, I think it's quite strong. It also, I think, was able to separate the wheat from the chaff because you saw people like Tim Pawlenty Rob Portman, and Chris Christie, the great hope, come up there and give a speech all about how great Chris Christie was. And a lot of people were like, ooh, maybe Chris Christie is both too angry and too selfish to be, you know, the next. On the other hand, Marco Rubio was fantastic, and Condi Rice was great, and Martinez was great. I mean, you guys, and what was so interesting is in a room filled with all white guys, the stage looked different. And the stage actually had some nice diversity, which I think was very helpful. In that respect, it helps the brand.
Mike?
See, we were having that debate, some of it off the air and some of it on the air, about the difference, say, about Obama and his worldview being so much different than the Republicans. It would take somebody like Condi Rice, who's the professor type. She's Stanford and so forth. And Obama is, even though he was never a professor, he was the professor type. He taught adjunct and so forth. The one big difference I saw in listening to Condi's speech, which so impressed me, was the recognition that we human beings are imperfect and that there's no way that we can somehow know all the answers and that the market is much more superior to come up with these answers than human beings. This is almost going back to the a view of Hayek and so forth, which I very much admire. And I think that you can have these very intellectual types, like the both of these, Obama and Condi. And Condi is just heads and shoulders above in terms of the future.
Is there anything done last week in Florida, John, that you think conceivably could adjust the plan or the script in Charlotte? In other words, should anything be changed in Charlotte from what they were planning on doing?
Well, you probably will have more of the humanization of the candidate, which works so well for Mitt, and you probably won't have an unscripted movie star come on just before the main event.
Where would you put the Republican convention on the demonization scale?
If
you were David Axelrod and you were looking, and I'm sure he's looked at every speech that's been on primetime, I did not get a sense that there was a demonization of Obama.
No, the talk radio people do a great job of doing that.
Okay, but now let's go.
That's why the dog whistle is so important.
Let's go to the convention now. If the American people, some of whom, let's say there's going to be a percentage that watches both of them. Well, I think it's a diminishing percentage that watch both. So they're gettable voters, conceivably. If they've just seen, you know, the coverage out of Florida, and they turn into North Carolina and to Charlotte, and it's shrill or it's lambasting, lampooning, ridiculing, assassinating, character assassination of Romney, is that a card they can play with the television cameras rolling for three or four nights?
I think that those cards will be played by some of the speakers. I can't imagine Joe Biden getting up there and waxing about marriage and
he may be
driving the
to
kids
an empty
to soccer
chair,
games.
The chair may not be there.
Well, that's possible. No, there's going to be some tough talk, absolutely, because one thing we've seen about Barack Obama, I'd say this last year or so, is no more kumbaya, no more let's all get together, sit down, because I used to be a community organizer and we can all work this out. He's taken off.
That's what a lot of people liked about him.
Well, that's true. But, you know, without getting too esoteric here, it gets back to Karl Rove's vision of what politics is all about in America. in this new century, and that is getting out the base. I mean, I think that's why you saw, I mean, that's one reason it was such a hard right Republican convention. And we're talking about the other side trending towards socialism and
whatnot. Would you agree
it's
that
about getting out the base? So Obama has, you're going to see a lot about women. You're going to see a lot about gay, lesbian, et cetera, et cetera. That's not going to be. You're going to see some genuflections toward unions and what they've done in America.
You said some good things in the last hour about the Clint Eastwood. You did not think that Clint Eastwood was over the top.
I thought it was fun. It was comic relief in an otherwise very very staged.
Did he do a good job in getting to the base? Did he do a good job in getting to the base?
I would say so, especially since a lot of the base, for instance, has given up on Afghanistan so far. I mean, you listen to a lot of talk radio people, they're not saying send more troops to defeat the Taliban. They want to get the heck out.
David, last word to you, then we're going to go to calls.
Yeah, just quick point. I think that what you're going to see that's different in Denver this week is that
– Charlotte.
Sorry, Charlotte.
Can't live in Denver.
Can't live in the past.
You got to come out from that mountain.
Although,
different altitude.
That's actually exactly my point, because Mitt Romney kept talking about restoring restore to the past and go back, and I think that he is going to absolutely regret saying that when the Democrats get done with it, because they're going to talk about him going back to the policies of the last decade that got us into the mess. And they're not going to talk about W, but they're going to talk about the policies, and I think it's a landmine that Democrats are going to exploit.
I saw one image. Somebody was doing a stand-up from Charlotte this afternoon, and there was one image that I saw that I would advise the Democrats to take down. That is, they had an image as part of their stage. They had Mount Rushmore.
Ooh.
I think the image of Mount Rushmore at any political convention is a bad idea. It may be just behind Mission Accomplished. As a visual you don't want. Mike in Corpus Christi, listening to us on XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead.
Evening, Bruce. Another good show.
Thank you.
Been listening to you guys for a long time.
Great.
And Mr. McCarron has impressed the heck out of me. I think I could actually buy him a beer as of tonight.
he's the type of Democrat you like.
Not up until tonight, and I'm sure at least two beers into it, there'd be a fist fight. But I would enjoy it up to that point. With regard to Clint Eastwood, my feeling on it is Mr. Eastwood made a commercial for GM many months ago, and there were a whole lot of the conservative and maybe less than conservative folks in the United States who wondered, wait a minute, is this a supporter of the other side? And just my feeling, but I think Mr. Eastwood needs to make it known that, I'm a little on the conservative side, and this is where I stand.
Yeah, that's a very good point, because it was the Super Bowl commercial that again, raised some questions about his political allegiance. Yeah,
that was for Chrysler, and it was a great commercial. But my understanding is that Clint has clarified this. He said, there was no political side to this whatsoever.
Yeah.
It was just an American company.
I believe that, too.
Yeah, but I think that's true.
I think there was a question out there, and Detective Callahan, being who he is, I think he needed to make it quite clear that a man's got to know his limitations.
Okay, let's go to Sam in, is it Merle's Inlet, South Carolina?
Yes, it is.
Yes, where is Merle's Inlet?
It's south of Myrtle Beach, about an hour north of Charleston, and was the home of writer Mickey Spillane.
Oh, very good. Well, listening to us on WRNN tonight. Nice to hear from you, Sam. Go ahead.
I think regardless of all the distractions, this election is still going to hinge on the economy. And everyone, including women, know how much it costs when they go to the pump to fill up their car. They know how much it costs to feed their families. And if you look at, for 100 years, gasoline reached $1.85 when Obama took office. In 3.5 years, it's gone up almost $2 a gallon under him. If you're going to have an economic recovery, which we need, who are we going to have leading that? One of the most successful business people in the history of this nation, or a socialist professor? That's the way I look at it. Thank you.
Stephanie?
I would agree. I think it's not going to come down to, the kind of issues that the Democrats are ready to bring out on their convention, but it's really going to come down to the economy. And again, when they talk about, you know, women's issues, you're right. The women's issues are, I just spent $93 filling up my car just the other day. Here in the city of Chicago. I even took a picture of it. That affects me. You know, I went to the grocery store, spent $160 on I don't even know what. And those are the issues, and I think that's one of the things.
These are the new women's issues.
These are the, yes. They're not new. They are real. They are the issues that we care about. And what I'm interested in seeing, and sort of stepping back a little bit, is all we heard before the Republican convention was this war on women. I've not heard that expression since. I believe very effectively that the Republicans have thwarted that issue. So I'm wondering, are they going to bring back the war on women when they have their own convention and when they have a bring out a list of speakers that, in terms of women issues, only talk about one thing? And I'm curious as to how that's going to play, because I think you're right. It's going to come down not about single-issue voters. It's going to come down to how do you feel. And again, that poll, only 69% of the country is not better off than we were 4 years ago.
When we come back, we're going to look ahead to Charlotte, and we've got a couple of calls left. But we also want to look ahead to the Democrats and what they're going to do in the next week in Charlotte, North Carolina, from coast to coast and border to border. Tonight from Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, now in our 32nd year on the air. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us this evening around the table. Our Democrats this evening are Dave Lundy. He is the head of Al-Anon Communications, and he's been a consultant not only to political campaigns, but also with the Better Government Association. So he has a bipartisan hat as well. John McCarron also joins us for many years. He's been with the Chicago Tribune and a contributing factor, was a member of the editorial board, columnist for a long time, and is known in the journalism field for his expertise in sort of urban affairs and urban affairs writing. And he is now an adjunct professor at DePaul University. Also from DePaul University this evening, a conservative Republican professor of economics, associate professor, and he is Mike Miller, and he is from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And Stephanie Hitt also joins us, a graduate of the University of Virginia and a lawyer. And tell us what kind of law you practice when you practiced law.
Well, in private practice, I actually worked in labor and employment law. So I know and in New York City. So I got to spend
a lot.
You were
with the U.S. Attorney's
Office. My first job in New York City was when Giuliani was the U.S. Attorney. At the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan. So I got to see.
What sort of a guy was he to work for?
Well, to be honest, I didn't get to get a lot of office time with him. But, you know, Giuliani is an incredibly inspirational man. He's hardworking. The bar that he set for people was pretty phenomenal. And every day when you walked in there, you felt an excitement that you knew what you were doing and you knew you were doing the right thing.
This was also a convention without 9/11. This was whereas Minnesota 4 years ago was virtually all about 9/11. It wasn't a hot topic this year. By the way, we're going to go to calls in just a moment, but I do want to ask people a question. Let me give my email address, btb@museum.tv. Write that down. BTB, like Beyond the Beltway, at museum.com. And I want to ask for your input, because if you're listening to this program on radio, you probably have noticed in the last 4 weeks we've changed the format a bit, and that we've had four guests, two Republicans and two Democrats, as opposed to three guests. And there are those that say, well, maybe that's too many voices to have on radio at the same time. And I want to get your reaction, whether you prefer four guests or two guests or three guests, rather. And maybe if you have some other suggestions you'd like as well, we would like those shared as well. But primarily, we want to know whether you like the new format with four guests. And let's go to Dave, listening to us in Arcata, California, listening to us on KGOE. Go ahead. Nice to hear from Northern California tonight.
Yeah, well, I like very much Clint Eastwood. I found him to be amusing. But as I was listening, I don't think his message was pro-Mitt Romney. It was saying we gave Obama his chance and mm-hmm. he blew it. I also feel that at least the Republican convention comes through clear to me, reading between the lines. We are here on behalf of the very, very wealthy. We are here on behalf of a fraction of the 1%. We could care less about you, the working class. Certainly we could care less about you, the poor. That comes through to me. I don't know if I'm seeing it accurately, but that's what I'm, what's coming through.
Well, one thing that Clint Eastwood said, he said, we own this country.
Yeah.
And you take Marco Rubio, came from nothing, and Martinez, and me, and other people. You come from nothing, and you work hard, and you are successful, and you just maybe resent somebody trying to take it all from you and give it to somebody else.
Yeah, but the most telling moment during Mitt Romney's speech was when he talked about the need to care for the poor and those less fortunate, and there were crickets in the audience. There wasn't a sound. There wasn't a clap. There was nothing. I mean, I don't think you can make an argument that Republicans are primarily focused on making sure that the middle class and the poor are helped. I don't think you could see that from a policy perspective in Ryan's budget, in what Romney has said. It is clear there is a defense of the 1%. Clearly, it's defense of more than the 1%. But it is a defense of the 1% and the privileges and the tax cuts, and the budget that they plan to put forward is going to have more and more and more tax cuts to the top.
I guess it. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Mike. I was just going to say the. I thought it was an incredible defense of those people that want to come to America. I mean, how many stories did we hear from the speakers that children of immigrants who came here for that opportunity? Marco Rubio talked about his father working at the banquet bar as a banquet bartender so that he could get his son the chance to be at the podium. We heard that story over and over and over. And what we heard was not a defense of 1%, but a defense of people who want to work hard, innovate, make their lives better. And they make their lives better. And I thought this was phenomenal. This is why I said family, I thought was the topic of the day, was people make their lives better for their families. They're not out there to hoard their wealth. They're out there because they want a better life for the future of their own children. And we heard that over and over.
I think there was definitely a realization that they have some ground to make up when it comes to immigrants. I mean, here they've got they're running a candidate who suggested that undocumented folks self-deport themselves. Like voluntary leave, just go so we don't have to arrest you and spend the money to lock you up.
John, look into your crystal ball. What do you think the president has to do next week in North Carolina?
Well, I'm probably going to disagree with you again by saying he's probably going to see an itemization of falsitudes that from the week previous. We're probably going to go over the Ryan speech point for point and refute that. Not the president. I think the president's going to be very forward looking, as the slogan mm-hmm. goes. But I think you are going to see some tough talk, and you're going to get some talk about the 1% and the arithmetic of what's being proposed by the Republicans, that we're going to have tax cuts, and we're going to be able to basically cut social programs and somehow balance the budget. It just doesn't add up.
Are they going to have to explain a lot? Should they be taking on their record and touting their record?
Absolutely.
Or do you think a record is something to be run away from?
Absolutely. I think that Democrats make the mistake, and the president's advisors make the mistake of running away from the question, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? I think you need to take that on head on. You need to talk about what the world looked like 4 years ago, when Barack Obama took office. The reason gasoline was $1.85 was that the economy was in complete free fall. You were shedding 750,000 jobs per month at the time. You've now got 29 consecutive months of private sector job growth. You've got, you know, the saying that they keep going back to, Bin Laden is dead and GM is alive. I think those are important points.
But if you are, again, speaking as you said before, and I agree that a convention first and foremost has to rev up and deliver the base. It's got to really ignite the base. And you ask that question, are you better off? And you are an African-American young man or an African-American, generally speaking. If you're a Hispanic, your unemployment rate is higher than the national average. You don't have a job. why is, or if you live in Chicago, your loved one could be murdered tonight. 40 people were shot over the weekend. Many of them will die. That's the city that we're living in right now. The president's home city. What do you, if you're one of those key people in his base, how can they say their life is better today than it was 4 years ago?
No, what I'm saying, Bruce, is that, and what the president needs to do is number one, defend the record strongly. The convention needs to mount a strong and vocal defense of the record. It needs to do what John said and attack the Republicans' math, which is just very bad.
What is the one? What is the one thing? One or two? Because again, he's going to. It's hard to take credit for more than four or five things in a speech, let alone be the message. So, if there's one or two things that the president should wave as a banner, I did this. We should be proud of this. This is why you are better off today than you were 4 years ago. Again, getting into the heart of the people that are home watching that on television. What do they have to say to those people?
We decimated Al-Qaeda. We decimated the leadership of Al-Qaeda.
If I'm out of work and I'm an African-American living in Chicago where my neighbors are getting shot, I don't give a rat's ass about Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, but that is not the target. So number one, you have to talk about
that. But that's your base.
But you have to give a vision for where you want to take the country in the next 4 years. Barack Obama to date has not done that. He hasn't done that, I think, deliberately. I think he's going to establish it at the convention, and he's going to lay out, this is what the next 4 years will look like. And it'll be said with some specificity. It also, the why things haven't gotten better is going to be placed in part squarely on the shoulders of the Republicans who have obstructed, and don't give me the 2 years of filibuster-proof majority because it was only 5 months nonsense. They have to go after the Republicans who have obstructed the agenda.
Mike.
As an economist, there's no doubt that the economy went through the worst recession since the Great Depression. The record, however, since then, since the expansion began in the summer of 2009, is the weakest expansion on record. Unemployment is still, 3 years later, higher than it was supposed to be once the stimulus was passed. It wasn't even supposed to go this high. It was supposed to go to 8.1 and then fall to 5.6 by now. The record is simply not there when it comes to the economy. I'm not arguing that there's necessarily something that Mr. Obama could have done to make the economy that much stronger. But don't tell me, when I can see that it's so terrible, that it's not so terrible. It would be terrible if Mr. McCain had made it, too. I'm convinced that there's not this magic that the president has to do this. So, and if you look at our view in the world, people's opinion of us, it hasn't improved. It's
gone improved way dramatically.
Down. Ask the Muslim world what they think of us.
I just read the Pew poll last night. It has improved dramatically all over the world.
Or China or Russia. We haven't even started on that.
1-800-723-8029. Weigh in. What advice would you be giving to the president next week? Again, we're going to offer this to Democrats. I'm sure a lot of Republicans would have some advice. We're looking for some Democrats to call in. Give the advice you would like to share with the president of the United States next week when he takes the podium in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly at 1-800-723-8029. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're coming to you from the Museum of Broadcast Communications on America's great talk radio stations from coast to coast and border to border, as well as on POTUS, on Sirius and XM satellite radio. And let's go to Grand Rapids, Michigan, where Lisa is listening tonight on XM. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to make two statements. But the first one, what I would tell the president, I would come out on stage and say that there is a fundamental question in this country on not whether we can afford Medicare or not, but whether we want to. Our taxes have been the lowest that they've been under President Obama almost since the 1930s, except for a short period in the 80s. And we've got to make a decision of whether we want to continue to give tax cuts or pay for health care for our seniors. First time in the country's history, and I would point this out, we have gone to war without increasing taxes to pay for it. And I would just really hit that home is, what type of America do we want? My next comment is the biggest driver of the deficit, one of them besides the military, is welfare. The biggest users of welfare are single women with children. And we have a vice presidential candidate that co-sponsored a sponsored personhood bill that will outlaw birth control. Romney said 2 months ago, now he's changed his opinion all the time on stuff, if it comes before his desk, he'll sign it. So for women economic issues, and to say that birth control and abortion isn't important, it is. How do we feed our children? How do we get them medical care when they're born with pre-existing conditions and we're not going to be able to get them coverage? These are all very serious women issues,
Mike, I'm an independent. Mike and Stephanie both want to respond to what you have to say, but Mike raised his hand first.
Real quick, in terms of the we went to war without raising taxes. Of course, the number one thing, that one of the most important things that the federal government has to do is protect us from foreign adversaries. But let's keep in mind, in 2001, we had projections of surpluses as far as the eye could see, with the belief that the national debt would be paid off within 10 years. Of course you cut taxes when it occurs. Secondly, 2001 was a year of a recession. Of course you cut taxes during a recession. Did it also happen that in September of that year that we were attacked by somebody and we had to go to war? Yes, it did. The idea that we somehow purposefully did not raise taxes to pay for the war is not looking at the context of how this was all
2003.
Done.
We went to war in 2003 and we cut
2001,
taxes. 2003. The expensive war was Iraq. Up until this time, the expensive war was Iraq. It cost $1 trillion, and we cut taxes in the middle of going to war in Iraq.
That $1 trillion includes money that was already allocated in every year's budget. And if you look at it as a percentage of GDP, it's a piker compared to Korea,
still
Vietnam.
Still the first time in history.
Pick up in the response to Lisa's question.
Well, and also I think, you know, we're convoluting issues here. Birth control does not solve poverty. Jobs solve poverty. And that's an important thing to remember. First of all, no one says Paul Ryan saying there's not going to be birth control out there. It's a matter of who's going to pay for it. And, you know, we're probably going to hear at next week's convention from a Georgetown University law student who's going to go out there and say that she's being deprived of this important right, when in fact it's readily available. Certainly. But the issue is, for single moms, the issue isn't birth control. It is, how do I feed these kids? What kind of education do my kids have? What kind of future? Can my kids get out of this cycle of poverty? Can I get a job? Will it pay me enough? Those are the issues.
John. So Mother Hubbard needed a better job. I really hope the Republicans stick with this, birth control thing. And I hope the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and the bishop who gave the benediction at the end of the Republican convention, I hope they stick to their guns, because it's a losing issue.
Should pay for contraception?
That it should be part of the guaranteed insurance program sold by private insurance companies through Obamacare. That's what's on the table, is it not?
Yeah, but Paul Ryan, you're wrong. You said Paul Ryan does not want to take away birth control. In fact, Paul Ryan was the House sponsor of the Personhood Amendment, which would have outlawed most forms of birth control. Okay, the fact is that Paul Ryan and Todd Akin co-sponsored numerous bills to do precisely that.
Why is a political question to you? Why is Todd Akin, according to some recent polls, why has Todd Akin moved ahead in Missouri with all the flack, everybody on the national party telling him to get off, and the most recent poll has him slightly in the lead?
They really don't like Claire McCaskill in Missouri.
Okay. So what does that say about the people of Missouri?
Says they really don't like Claire McCaskill, and they don't like Barack Obama. Barack Obama is going to lose badly in Missouri, and I think that Claire McCaskill has been a strong advocate for President Obama's policies.
Dan in Chicago, go ahead. You're on the air listening to us on 89 WLS.
Morning, Bruce. It's Dean, not Dan.
Dan, I'm sorry.
Great show. Just wanted to point out a fact. New York Times reported this week that the new jobs that have been created by Obama, 59% of them have been for $13 an hour or less. 50% of them are part-time. Yeah. They have no benefits. We probably have a real unemployment rate of somewhere between 18 and 20%. This is a depression, and people know it. And I don't care what the Democrats do at their convention. They ain't going to put any lipstick on that pig.
All right. On that note, we'll think about that. Any surprise? Give me a quick any surprise out of North Carolina, our Democrats. Anybody?
No.
Want to predict a surprise?
I will. Bill Clinton will repeat word for word the speech he gave 4 years ago.
Word for word. Okay, we'll look into that. Matt Note, we want to say farewell to our guest. Mike Miller from DePaul University has been here. Stephanie Hitt, thank you, folks, representing the Republican perspective this evening. And Dave Lundy, political consultant, John McCarron, also of DePaul University, the Chicago Tribune for many, many years, representing the Democrats this evening. Folks, thanks very much. It was a good, lively, yet spirited and intelligent discussion. This program is a Genevieve production, produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. And our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week at this same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.